Good morning. This is 5 at 8. Today's Friday, March 15th, 2024. And here's Linda Carlisle and Mark Overman with today's top news. In this episode, we'll talk about engineers sending a signal to Voyager 1 to fix a communication issue, Putin emphasizing space projects, including a nuclear power unit, Ukraine's declining reliance on American weapons, concerns about the AI boom on Wall Street, and the opening of America's first commercial-scale offshore wind farm. Story number one. In a report from CNN, engineers have sent a signal to the Voyager 1 probe in hopes of fixing a communication issue that has lasted for 5 months. The spacecraft, launched in 1977, is currently the farthest from Earth at 15 billion miles away. The signal received suggests progress in understanding the problem. Voyager 2, the twin spacecraft, has also faced challenges as they age. Both probes have provided valuable insights about our solar system and beyond. The mission team is working to decode the flight data system's memory to find the source of the issue. The communication breakdown issue is not connected to previous glitches. The team is analyzing the data and working on potential solutions to restore full communication with Voyager 1. Who would have thought, Linda, that we'd be able to communicate with a spacecraft billions of miles away, let alone troubleshoot its issues from our cozy studio here on Earth? It's a testament to human ingenuity and the power of technology. It's like having a car breakdown in the middle of nowhere, but your mechanic is on the other side of the planet, and yet they're still able to help you fix it. Astounding!
That's one way to look at it, Mark. But it also highlights the inherent limitations and challenges of our current technology. We're talking about a spacecraft launched in 1977. That's over 50 years ago. Think about how much our technology has evolved since then. Imagine if we had the technology back then that we have now.
Sure, but that's what makes this all the more impressive, Linda. We're still able to communicate with and troubleshoot a spacecraft using decades-old technology. It's a testament to the durability and longevity of the original engineering. Not everything needs to be the latest and greatest to get the job done.
I see where you're coming from, Mark. But wouldn't it be better if we could prevent these issues in the first place? Or at least have more efficient ways to address them when they do occur? We're lucky that we've been able to resolve the issues with Voyager 1 and 2 so far, but what about next time?
I hear you, Linda. But isn't that part of the thrill of space exploration? The unpredictability, the challenge, the need for problem solving? It's not just about getting there. It's about the journey, the lessons we learn along the way. And boy, have we learned a lot from Voyager 1 and 2.
No doubt about that, Mark. The Voyager's missions have indeed enriched our understanding of the cosmos. But as we continue to push the boundaries of space exploration, we need to leverage our current knowledge and technological advancements to minimize risks and maximize success. But it's an exciting time to be alive, isn't it?
Story number two. In a report from CNN, Russian President Vladimir Putin emphasizes the importance of space projects, including a nuclear power unit in space, during a meeting with government officials. Russia and China are working on a project to install a nuclear reactor on the moon between 2033 and 2035. This news follows reports of Russia developing a nuclear space weapon that could potentially disrupt satellites in orbit. Where there's smoke, there's fire. Right, Linda? President Putin's comments about prioritizing space projects, including setting up a nuclear power unit in space, certainly seem to confirm suspicions regarding Russia's intentions in the space race. It's interesting to me how economic and political interests are shaping the advancements in space technology. The fact that both Russia and China are considering a project to install a nuclear reactor on the moon by 2035 really puts the global space race into perspective.
Yes, Mark. The implications of this are far-reaching and complex. The use of nuclear power in space is not new. The United States, for instance, has been using radioisotope thermoelectric generators, or RTGs, for decades to power space probes and rovers. But the idea of setting up a full-fledged nuclear power unit in space is certainly a level up. The benefits can be significant. It could potentially provide a reliable and efficient power source for long-term space missions. But it's also fraught with potential risks and challenges.
Right, Linda. Risks like the potential weaponization of space. The report about Russia trying to develop a nuclear EMP device that could potentially disrupt a large number of commercial and governmental satellites is concerning. If used, it could cause extreme disruptions to everyday life in ways we can't predict. It's almost like a throwback to the Cold War era, right? when the militarization of space was a real fear. So it begs the question, are we on the precipice of another space arms race?
Mark, the comparison with the Cold War era is apt in many ways, but the context has changed considerably. Back then, it was largely a bipolar world with the US and USSR as the key players. Today, it's much more multipolar with several countries showing interest and making advances in space technology. This makes the situation even more complex. Furthermore, the proliferation of commercial entities in space exploration adds another layer to this complex tapestry. So, it's not just about countries anymore, but also about private corporations, which raises questions about the regulation of weapons in space.
Yeah, you're spot on there, Linda. The stakes are higher now, and the actors are more diverse. It's not just about national security anymore, but global security. And while space exploration and the use of nuclear technology for peaceful purposes can spur innovation and offer benefits, the potential misuse of such technology can have catastrophic consequences. It's a fine line to walk, isn't it?
It is a fine line. The ethical considerations and regulatory challenges involved are immense. It calls for international cooperation, transparency, and robust regulatory mechanisms, not just at the national level, but at a global level. We've always looked up at the stars with a sense of wonder and awe. Let's hope we can navigate through these challenges to ensure that our exploration of space remains a testament to our shared curiosity and quest for knowledge, rather than a threat to our collective security.
Story number 3. In a report from the New York Times, Ukraine's reliance on American weapons to fight Russian invaders is declining due to a lack of U.S. support. House Republicans have blocked additional aid, and the Biden administration's recent $300 million package may only help for a few weeks. Ukraine's recent losses signal the consequences of an undersupplied war effort, as they ran out of artillery shells during the retreat from the eastern city of Avdiivka. In contrast, Russia's economy is thriving, allowing them to continue producing weapons and supplying their troops. Is it just me, or is this situation in Ukraine starting to feel like a replay of Vietnam? We've got a smaller, less equipped country trying to hold its own against a larger, more powerful aggressor, and the U.S. is trying to help out without getting too directly involved. It's a tough spot to be in, but I think we've got to honor our commitments to our allies.
I see where you're coming from, Mark, but I don't think the comparison to Vietnam is quite accurate. First of all, the geopolitical context is different. During the Cold War, the U.S. was directly pitted against the USSR, and Vietnam was seen as a battleground to prevent the spread of communism. Today, the conflict in Ukraine is more about Russia's unilateral aggression and desire to expand its sphere of influence. Secondly, the U.S. has been providing defensive, not offensive, aid to Ukraine. It's not about escalating the conflict, but about giving Ukraine the means to defend itself.
I get your point, Linda, but what I'm trying to say is, well, it's about the broader picture. We can't just provide aid and then wash our hands clean of the situation. Sure, it's defensive aid, but these weapons are still being used in a war. And with the U.S. support dwindling, as the article mentions, it's not looking good for Ukraine. They're running out of artillery shells and had to retreat from Avdiivka. I just feel that we can't leave them high and dry.
Yes, the situation is dire, Mark. But I think we must also consider the potential consequences of further U.S. involvement. What will it mean for our relations with Russia? And what about the risk of escalating the conflict even more? Moreover, it's not only about military support. We need to think about financial aid, sanctions against Russia, diplomatic efforts. It's a multifaceted problem.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. But let's not forget Russia's allies. North Korea, Iran, they're helping Russia despite the sanctions. It's a complex web, and we need to pull the right strings.
That's true, Mark. And that's why it's so important to take a balanced approach. We need to consider all the different aspects of the situation, and that includes the potential consequences of our actions.
Story number 4. Investor Jeremy Grantham believes that the artificial intelligence boom on Wall Street is a bubble that could start deflating. He predicts a sharp pullback in the market and an economic downturn. Meanwhile, BP and an oil company from the UAE have suspended talks to buy a stake in Israel's leading natural gas producer due to the ongoing war in Gaza. China has criticized a potential TikTok ban in the U.S. as an act of bullying that would backfire. According to CNN, these recent developments are causing concern in the financial and geopolitical arenas. Tell you what, Linda, this AI bubble that Jeremy Grantham is warning about, it's something we can't just push under the rug. We've seen tech stocks surge to incredible heights last year and this year, with the likes of Nvidia leading the charge. But Grantham, who rightly predicted the dot-com crash and the 2008 financial crisis, isn't buying into this bullish market.
Yes, Mark. It's a complex situation. Grantham's assertion that the exuberance showed all the classic signs of a bubble about to burst resonates with the experiences of the past. Remember the painful sell-off in 2022? But then, we saw the tech-heavy rally sparked by the launch of ChatGPT. It's a delicate balance, and the market is almost like walking a tightrope at the moment.
It's like we're stuck in a loop of sorts. Grantham seems to believe that this is just a pause and not a stop. He's foreseeing another sell-off and even a possible economic downturn. The question is, are we ready for it? Or better yet, can we prevent it?
Well, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it, Mark? And it's not just about the tech and AI sector. Look at the current geopolitical climate. The BP and UAE suspending their $2 billion gas deal in Israel due to the ongoing war in Gaza. These are big businesses making major decisions based on the global political landscape.
The political environment has a massive influence on business decisions. And it's not just in the Middle East. Look at what's happening in the US with TikTok. The potential ban is seen by China as an act of bullying that would backfire on America.
Yes, it's a global landscape where technology, politics, and finance are intricately woven together. The repercussions of a move in one area echo across the rest. And it's not just about potential economic downturns or market volatility. It's also about the trust of investors, the confidence of businesses, and the impact on ordinary people.
Couldn't agree more, Linda. It's a high-stakes game with unpredictable outcomes. But at the end of the day, it's a game we're all a part of, whether we're playing or just watching from the sidelines. Story number 5. In a report from NPR, America's first commercial-scale offshore wind farm, South Fork Wind, is now open off the coast of New York. The project, developed by Ørsted and Eversource, marks a significant step in transitioning to clean energy. The success of South Fork Wind paves the way for future offshore wind projects across the country. Mighty impressive, isn't it, Linda? The inauguration of South Fork Wind, America's first commercial-scale offshore wind farm. It's a symbol of what we can achieve when we marry technology, entrepreneurship, and a commitment to environmental sustainability. This is a big win for renewable energy and a potential game-changer for our fight against climate change.
It is impressive. Ørsted and Eversource have achieved a significant milestone. But let's not forget the journey it took to get here. The U.S. offshore wind industry has faced significant challenges, like the failed Cape Wind project and the high costs of building materials and capital due to inflation and supply chain disruptions. It's been a long road to this point.
That's true, Linda. There have been bumps in the road, no doubt. But as they say, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. These challenges have ultimately resulted in more resilient and sustainable business models. And let's not forget, the South Fork Wind Farm is just the beginning. There are plans for even bigger wind farms like Revolution Wind and Sunrise Wind. It's like flipping a switch to a brighter, cleaner future.
That's a beautiful analogy, Mark. However, there are still hurdles to overcome. We have to consider the impact on local communities, marine life, and the potential for unforeseen consequences. But the goal of powering 10 million homes with offshore wind energy by 2030, as set by the Biden administration, is an ambitious one that could drive significant positive change.
I agree, Linda. There are always risks and challenges with any new venture. But that's where the power of innovation and the human spirit come in. We've got to believe in the potential for a better future. After all, as Interior Secretary Holland put it, America's clean energy transition is not a dream for a distant future. It's happening right here and right now.
The South Fork Wind Farm does represent a turning point, but it's just one piece of the puzzle. To truly address climate change, we need a comprehensive approach that includes reducing carbon emissions across all sectors, promoting conservation, and investing in education and research. This is a big step, but there are many more to take.
It's all about the journey, and the South Fork Wind Farm is a positive stride in the right direction. Exciting times ahead! That's it for this morning. Have a great day and see you all tomorrow.
5 at 8 is researched, written, and performed by artificial intelligence. For more information, visit botcaster.ai.